Welcome to Mulling It Over with Brandon Mole.
Hi, I'm Brandon Mole. I'm a number one New York Times bestselling author of a bunch of fantasy series like the Fablehaven series and many more.
And I'm Jason Conforto. I'm a filmmaker, a podcaster, and game designer. In this podcast, we're excited to share our love for story and our passion to create.
We hope to share a bunch of experiences and lessons learned over a lifetime in creative fields.
Today, we're joined with Charon. Thanks for being here.
Oh, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
This is Charon Babakar. Do you get the whole name? Because it's
a mouthful.
It's tricky if you don't know it. But is that pretty close, Charon Babakar?
I mean, it's better than the way I would say it. So
how would you say it? Let's get that one out.
Okay, I'm just kidding. No, I would say Provocker. So right.
It's close enough.
Yeah, close enough. It was amazing.
But yeah, we've been friends for a while, and he's a talented guy. He's been on, he's been on some shows. Like he was on The Chosen, and he was on Silicon Valley, and he's got tons of acting credits. And I thought it would be fun to talk to him a little bit about creating characters, because this is something that he does. He loves comedy. He loves performing. Is this true, Charon?
All true stories. All true stories. I still have a creative side in me, but it came out more in the performance rather than the writing.
Yeah. How did you get into acting to start off?
Well, you know, it's kind of a funny story. I dipped into it, I would say, in high school, like just a little bit in high school, and I liked it. And it was really fun. But I was like, well, that's just fun. I'm not going to do anything with it. But I remember, so I served an LDS mission. When I had come home, I was kind of trying to figure out what I wanted to do in my life, you know, like everyone of us do. And while I was in like college, like nothing excited me. Like everything was like, yeah, that could be something I could do. That's something that my dad would want. So therefore maybe I should want it too. But I remember in 2004, there was this moment when I was kind of having like a little bit of a depressive week. And I kind of reflected on that week and started thinking, okay, when I get old and I look back on my life, if I regret anything, what would it be? And I knew that if I never gave acting a shot, I'd regret it. So I was like, well, why haven't I given it a shot then? Like, why haven't I really like fully gone for it? And I realized I was afraid. I was afraid I was going to fail. And I was like, oh man, like I remember always telling people, like, you know, having faith and not, you know, like going through your, you know, like not having to like always be worried about what you would fail at. And now here I was doing the same thing. And I'm like, you know what? I got to at least go for it. So I said, I'm going to be an actor. And right when I said that, it was like one of those weird, like full body yeses that happened. And I was so excited about it. And then all of these things just kept coming up. That was like, kind of like almost like witnessing to me, like, yes, you made the right decision. You made the right decision. So that journey took me to being an actor.
Nice. So. And how long ago was that?
2004.
Committed.
Yeah.
A couple decades ago. Doing this. And is this your full-time career then? Or
yeah, acting, producing, you know, I've been doing it since, I got into it. I went to BYU, so I was kind of dabbling a little bit. Once I graduated in 2006, that's when I really kind of committed, and I was working as well, like a side job while I was trying to like kind of figure out this path. And then in 2009, I moved to L.A., to like really go for it. So I was doing all these TV shows and, you know, I got on this awesome show called Silicon Valley, which like really helped my career out. And so I did that for a bit, but I realized I really wanted to produce more as well. I wanted to create my own content that I could act in. So I moved back to Utah in the end of 2019. And the reason I moved back was because I booked a TV show that we have a mutual friend, Jason Faller, who cast me in this TV show called The Outpost, and I did like a season of that. And while I was here, I asked my Utah agent, I said, hey, if I move back, is there enough work for me here to sustain me? And they're like, absolutely. So I moved back, and they definitely put me to work. So yeah, I've been here since 2018, 2019, back in Utah.
That's awesome. Yeah,
it's been great.
Yeah, Jason Fowler's, he's a good guy.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, I went to college with him in the film program, and he's awesome. He produced my my senior film.
Yes,
actually at BYU. So that's awesome.
And as a fun fact, he's the guy who's trying to make Candy Shop War into a series.
That's right.
So yeah,
that's right.
He's got the option. So fingers crossed for Jason Faller.
No, that'll be terrific. Yeah. So one of the things that we want to talk about today is building and creating characters, and just kind of compare what that's like for a writer to create a character and for an actor to build a character that has been given to them. But the purpose is the same, is like to bring this character to life, whether you're a writer or an actor, like what that process is to bring a character to life. So Brandon, just why don't you get us started? Just what is your process to bringing life to a character?
Well, yeah. So here's one of the tricky things. I sometimes describe writing a book like climbing a mountain that does not exist yet. And it doesn't exist until you climb it. And one aspect of that, or one little mountain you have to climb, is having characters in your story. And until you have a character, it's nothing. And when you have a character, you have a person. And it's interesting to think, how do I go from having nothing to then having somebody that I care about and that I hope a reader will care about? And I think the essence for me of a character is to know the character well. I'm reaching for this character, and sometimes I have a role I want them to fill in the story. Mm-hmm. And so I think, who would fill this role in an interesting way, in a compelling way? And I'm trying to think of some basic attributes. I know Sanderson will have like character sliders that he will do, like on a character sheet, where he'll like say, like on a spectrum of 0 to 10, how brave or how cowardly is this character, right? And he'll
just kind of plot out all the different characteristics of the,
this guy's kind of an 8 on bravery, this guy's kind of a 3 on intelligence, and he's just trying to get a feel for the
person.
It's
like building a D&D character, right? You got your 6 attributes and you just go.
A little bit, yeah. And then it's like also I'm thinking about in what ways is their personality extreme? Because mm-hmm. extremes are interesting, right? So what are some extremes this character has? What does this character really want mm-hmm. that helps them take shape? Does this character have some secrets that helps the character take shape? But for me, you know, which is probably different from Charon, is it's largely a thought experiment for most of the time, right? And then I am bringing that character to life just with words out of my brain, and they've only existed either as notes on a page or as impressions in my mind, thoughts in my mind. And really, for me, as I write them into scenes is maybe the culminating act of getting to know them, right? Because I kind of have plan who they are, but then as I see how they act and react on the page, I usually get a clearer vision of the character as I go. Characters I've written a lot, like Seth or Kendra, because I've spent so much time with them, they become so easy to write. I feel like I know them very well. Mm-hmm. And when I put them in a scene, they feel familiar, and I know the kind of thing they would do with various circumstances. So Charon, how do you attack it, though? Because, you know, so that's a little bit about how I'm attacking it at the start. How do you attack it when you are assigned to create a character, or maybe when you're just trying to invent a character of your own, you know, without a script?
You know, it's funny, as you're saying all this stuff, I was like, wow, that's a lot of thought that goes into creating a character. That's amazing. Because usually, especially as an actor, I just get the script with a character, and then they're like, hey, we want you to kind of put your voice to it, your spin on it, right?
So talk about that.
Yeah,
talk about that. When someone gives you a script, and they want you to bring it to life,
what does that look like? What's that process?
What's the process? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's actually kind of funny because I had this exact experience. It was in 2008. This is kind of a weird and random story, but I know you guys like weird and random. It was the day of my high school reunion, my 10-year high school reunion. And in this building where we're having our high school reunion, there happened to be a separate, like, it was like a Zango MLM convention, okay, or something like that. It was like a Shosai, like a chocolate convention or something. And I happened to be friends with some of the distributors there. So I was like going over there talking to them. And one of the guys was like, hey, I know you're an actor, right? Like, I want to introduce you to a director friend of ours. So he introduced me to this guy, Jeff Chamberlain. And Jeff and I hit it off. He was a really nice guy, and he was like, "Hey, yeah, let's keep in touch. I'm working on some projects, and would love to have you maybe audition or something." So this is in May. Now, fast forward to July, August of that year, and I get this audition notification for this suspense movie. Okay, and one of the characters in this suspense movie he is kind of like the comic relief.
Right.
And they described him as like maybe Asian or Indian. I'm like, oh, Indian, I can do that. I can definitely do that. For those of you listening, I'm of Indian descent. Anyway, so
it doesn't come off clear in audio only, right?
I know. Yeah, I'm of Indian descent. So I was like, oh, I could totally do that. And so I had this description. He's kind of the comic relief. You know, he has the Indian accent. He's got all of these things. And he kind of adds a little bit of levity in a movie that's otherwise pretty suspenseful, mm-hmm. right? So I'm like, okay. So I started conceiving who this character was. And I go to the audition, and I do it according to – and the director wasn't there. It was the casting director. And I do it according to the way I envisioned it. And the casting director was just laughing. He was like, oh, you're nailing it. You're nailing it. This is amazing. I'm like, sweet. So I nailed it enough to go to the callback, and then they had, like, multiple callbacks. Mm-hmm. And I got to meet the director. I got to meet the, different producers, and it was great. And then the director, you know, he and I were sort of bantering back and forth, and he's like, okay, yeah, this is, it's really good, it's great. But he's like, you know, I'm really not, and we even did like a table read with all like cast from Utah, potential cast from Utah. And he's like, you know what, I'm really not that happy with the talent I'm finding in Utah. So I'm going to go to LA. I'm like, oh, great. You know, well, there goes my chances of being an Indian in a movie, I guess. And he's like, no, I mean, I liked you, but I want to like, I need to like cast a wider net. So he ended up auditioning a bunch of other folks. But as far as my character goes, he liked me the most. So in the end, he cast everyone else. There were five of us that were the leads. Four of them were LA. The other one was me.
Nice.
And very so good. He cast me. And so then I was like, okay, this is great. And I'm like kind of nervous because I'm like working with like people that are like seasoned actors that have been on tons of stuff. So there's a little bit of like nervousness that kind of got in my head, right? But I'm doing this table read and with these new cast mates, and they're just like, oh my gosh, Charon, you're so funny. Like that you're just the way you're listening is awesome. We're really excited. It's gonna be awesome. And then I get to the first day of shooting, and I only had a couple lines, just a couple lines. And as I was doing it, the director's like, hey, just so you know, that's not the character I want.
And the one you've been doing the whole time?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's information that you'd want the first day of shooting.
I see. Well, and I think he had tried to...
Like, this is the only character I can do.
Yeah, I'm like...
It's me.
I'm like, what do you mean? What do you mean? And it was interesting because... And I definitely got in my head. Because he had alluded to like something different like that. But then during the table reads, during all that prep... He had so many things going on.
And other notes for other actors probably, yes, and absolutely. Other focuses. And yeah.
So he didn't really spend the time, like at that time, telling me what the character was he wanted, you know? Because he's like, you are the comic relief. I want you to be the comic relief, but I don't want you to be goofy. I don't want you to play it goofy, which is fine. I just, because I'd been kind of prepping that way this whole time, I'm like, oh, no, you know? And so the first day of only, like, a couple lines, I was, like, totally in my head, which is not a place you want to be as an actor. And I wrapped that day, like, full of nervousness because I knew the next day I had a really big scene, you know? And
when you say you're in your head, mm-hmm. just to make sure I understand what you're saying, when you say you're in your head, you're feeling really self-conscious.
Super self-conscious.
You're overthinking everything.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's in
which
your head,
which
right?
you don't want as an actor because you want to be
present.
You
want to be present. You want to be connected to the characters and the other character, and you just like just go and like
be in the moment, experiencing the moment.
Yeah. Exactly.
Feeling
the last thing you want is in your mind going, "Don't mess up. Don't mess up.
Don't mess
up."
up.
Yeah, yeah.
Or don't say the line this way, not that way. Say the line this way. And so when you're thinking about your lines and how to say your lines while you're in the scene, you're not present.
It's going
to
come out so wooden.
It's going to come out wooden. It's going to come out fake. It's not going to come out authentic.
Okay, So keep going.
So the second day, I'm like so stressed out. I'm like, how am I going to pull this off? And the director, Jeff, to his credit, like while they were prepping the scene, he grabbed me and he pulled me aside, and he was super gentle. And he started painting this vision of what he had in mind for the character. And it was different. It was definitely different than the way I had perceived it before. and how all the other actors and everyone had just given me affirmations.
Yeah.
Yes, as well as the casting director. But he said, no, I kind of want it like this. And he painted this other picture of this guy that, like, he seems, like, so dry and so subtle and seems so, like almost like he's just, like, he just says things so factually, but in the end, you find out, like, he's just pulling the wool over everyone's eyes, you know?
Was the director also the writer, or?
He was also the writer,
yeah.
You know?
So he probably had a voice in his head.
Yes.
As he was writing the script. Yep.
So he told me that, and the weirdest thing was, and this is where, this magic happened. He told me that, and suddenly the light bulb went on in my head. And it wasn't, like, a crazy long, like, oh, no. Like, I just knew what he wanted. And I also knew how to tap into that.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, my gosh, Jeff, I get it. I know this guy. I know what you're talking about. So from that moment on, the moment he said action, I was that character. And I could just – and it was interesting because there's some people, some actors that are very method, right? Like, they're 24/7, like, on set, off set, you know, when the camera's not rolling, they're that character. And I'm not necessarily a guy like that. I can go from Charon to being the character back to Charon, you know?
Yeah, you don't have to stay in the character 24 hours a day so that you're always ready to go.
Nope.
You can turn it on and off.
I can turn it on and off. And there's something kind of like, I don't know if it's like psychological or whatever, but like when they say action, it's like a new shift of consciousness, like a new, like I'm just like, oh, I'm a different person. I'm just this person. But because he had painted this picture and suddenly I had this aha moment in my head, I instantly knew how to play the character. And it was interesting because, like, he's like, oh,
that's it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah. And he very rarely directed me from that moment on. He just was like, oh, yeah, like, that's it. And, like, and then, like, the other actors were, like, they saw the cadence and they were able to, like, react just honestly off of it because they're awesome actors. And it was really great. And the really cool thing was, so we had like a really fun shoot, and I always joke around saying, like, you know, the movie came out and it got like, it was like 5 stars on Netflix, and everyone's like, dude, that's amazing. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, only 1.5 of those colors were red, the others were white, but there were 5 stars. I counted, and it was amazing. But what was cool was the last day of the shoot, like, we had wrapped, we're having dinner, the director's like, hey, I gotta talk to you about something. I'm like, yeah. He's like, so I didn't want to tell you this earlier because I didn't want to, like, psych you out or anything like that. When I was writing this script, I was struggling how to write this fifth character. I had no idea. I didn't know how to, like, I knew I wanted something new, but I didn't know what it was. And then I met you at that convention. And right when I met you, I was like, what if it was, like, someone like that, like an East Indian guy? He's like, I didn't think I was going to cast you. I just kind of had that thought. And suddenly the character just took a life of his own and I wrote it. And so, like, for you to, like, actually play that part was just so great. And it was really interesting. And see, that the director and I, like, we connected so well. Unfortunately, he had, and I don't even know what year it was, 2014, 2015, he ended up getting cancer, and in 2020 he passed away. Mm. So we had so many discussions about that movie and, like, what a special experience it was for us making that film. And it was such a cool experience because it was one of the times where, as a younger actor, as a newer actor, I got into, oh, this is how I can kind of create a character and can kind of sustain it. Still using my voice, but kind of creating a different kind of performance.
Tell me that first day of shooting when you only had those two lines.
Yeah.
When you rewatch the film and that scene comes up, when you watch it, can you tell that you're not that character yet?
I can tell, but it's such a quick scene, and there's only like a couple lines, and I think they kind of like cut around a little bit. You honestly, if someone watched it, they would never be able to tell.
They couldn't pick out that.
No
scene.
One would ever be able to tell. But
well,
it was just,
let's let our audience actually find out what's the name of the film, and then we'll let
it's,
it.
It's called Abandoned Mine.
Abandon Mine.
Abandon Mine, and good luck with that scene, guys. You know? I'm excited for you to find that out. So, but you know, I was going to say one more story regarding creating character.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I got to LA, I joke about how LA was kind of like the fall of Adam and Eve. You know, it's like it was a progression, but it was definitely a fall. That's right, how right, I right. felt about LA. I'm like, I guess I'm progressing, but dang, this sucks. No, I didn't know what I was doing. I was in a pond of like I went from like a small pond to like this huge, vast ocean, tons of opportunities and tons of people going for the same role, and it was crazy. And I remember it was in 2013. I had gone for an audition for like a Wendy's commercial, and I bombed it so hard. And I'm like, dude, what am I doing here? What, like, this is the worst. I should just move back home and, you know, and just, like, figure something else out. And I happened to stumble across a YouTube video that Bryan Cranston gave about auditioning and how you should, like, it's so hard to create a new character when you don't have a ton of material and you haven't, like, had a ton of time to prepare for it. You just get an audition. You have to go in and go present, right? So he suggested using your own voice, like be you, but your version of the character. Like, don't, like even though you haven't like figured out like who this person is, like just go with those instincts. And then of course, over time, you know, you'll be able to like change it, shape it, and all that stuff.
But so, you're already fleshed out, though. That's the advantage, right?
Yeah, that's the advantage. Is you're fleshed out, you know. You and for whatever reason, because I used to always think, oh, I gotta be a completely different person. And he's like, no, just be you. Like, use your voice. So I had gone to this audition. It was for a show called Deep Tech, which later they changed the name to Silicon Valley. So I'd gone to this audition, and I got this monologue, and I did it. And I had perceived the character a certain way. When I got there, the casting director painted a picture that was totally different than the way I perceived it. I'm like, dang it, there it goes again, you know? And she said, hey, this is a character that's, like, really, really shy, really awkward. He's on stage. He's giving, a speech, but he's so painfully awkward and shy, and that's what makes it so funny because it's just unbearable to watch this guy suffer. And I'm like, well, I'm very confident playing confident characters, but I'm extremely confident playing pathetic characters because that's not even acting. Anyway, so I was like, all right, let's do this. So I did it kind of awkward and shy and everything, and she thought it was so funny, and it merited me getting a callback. Now, the callback was what's called a producer's session, so when I went for the callback, it was crazy because I went into, like, this room up in, like, these, like, offices in like, a studio. It was, like, a long table, and, like, we had, like, Mike Judge there, Alec Berg, like, all these, like, HBO execs and people that have, like, created, like, big, big shows. Thankfully, I didn't Google all of them, or else I would have been really intimidated, you know? So I had the lines memorized, and I did it the way that the casting director had suggested, shy and awkward and all this stuff. And I could tell, like, the room was, like, kind of, like, laughing, they're kind of snickering. Then I go, ah, this is funny. And then Mike suggested some notes to just help improve the character, help make different choices. And the whole time he kept saying that, I'm like, man, I don't see this character this way at all. And so I'm like, hey, just for fun, can I try something completely different? He's like, oh, do you see the character differently? And I'm like, yeah. I kind of do, actually. Which I guess I'm like, I was a little nervous because I'm sitting with the right guys that wrote the script, you know? And I'm like, yeah, I actually kind of see him a little differently. And so I played it more of like a guy that thought he was so hot just because of like his success, but he was so ridiculous and so oblivious to what an idiot he is. So I played it that way, and the room was dying laughing. Like, they just erupted in laughter afterwards. And they're like, oh my gosh, like, that was so funny. The casting director's like, dude, that was awesome. And I went to my car, called my manager. I'm like,
I think I got it.
I think that was pretty amazing, you know? And then, yeah, sure enough, I got it. And what was interesting was when they gave me the actual sides for filming, they rewrote it to be more like the way I did it.
Oh, cool.
So I was like, that was like a really cool, empowering experience.
You literally breathed life into that character so much that the writer had to go back.
Exactly.
And adapt the script because that's awesome.
So, I mean, you know, different than like writing a book for sure, but like, it's interesting how when I can use my imagination and still use my voice, characters kind of come to life. You know what I mean? As opposed to if I'm too abstract or too like, oh, I want to just do it the way the director has and stuff, then I'm like way more thinking about my lines and I'm thinking so much about how to say the words with such like cadence or whatever that it always comes across kind of wooden. And I... like, now that I've, like, been a seasoned actor and I've seen different performances of mine, I can always tell, like, oh, I was in the zone. I was there. I was like authentically listening to the person. And other times I'm like, yeah, that was definitely me acting. You know?
Yeah, I was acting in quotes, right? Yeah.
You know, I kind of want to talk about kind of the flip side of what we're talking about, which is characters that are flat, are wooden, that don't have any life in them, and just kind of your perspective of that. I think the danger with writing would be writing a character that is plot first, right? That they have a, and for acting it would be lines first, right? It's just they're just saying what's in front of them, and both have the same problem. What, Brandon, what's been your experience with like writing characters that are just flat and not working?
Yeah, there's a couple ways that happens to me, and you kind of, you alluded to kind of both of them, but the first way it happens where a character comes out really flat is if I don't think hard about who they are,
mm-hmm.
and therefore fall into like a default kind of voice, just kind of like I just use, like, if I don't think hard, there is a voice I will slide into.
Right.
Right. Like, yeah. like because I write a lot, I do side characters enough that if I just sort of need a side character, if I don't think hard about who they are and make them an individual, I will slide into a certain kind of voice, yeah. right?
Which is funny because that's almost the opposite advice that you got from your acting coach, which was you have this built-in character, just use it. But that doesn't work in a book because you're playing every part.
In a book, I am playing every role. So I am one guy trying to seem like 100 guys and girls or whatever. And so, yeah, if I go to my default voice for every character will sound a lot like me, right?
Yeah. It'd be like Charon playing every part in a movie.
Yeah.
And my default voice works really well for one character, but it becomes recognizably the same voice if I use it for 10, right? And so that's way number one that I can fall into it. And way number two is if I am worried more about moving the story where it needs to go and I let the character be a servant just of the plot, instead of think through who they are. Like, sometimes I'm wanting them to say the thing that is convenient for moving the story in mm-hmm. the direction I want it. And if I do that too much, I mean, obviously, if you think about it, that's going to not feel very human.
Right? Do you find that it's the same type of character every time? Like, it's the villain that's always plot-driven, or the sidekick, or the protagonist, or is it...
That one can be anybody. That one can be anybody. And it's usually when I'm in the early phases of writing, and I am, when I say early phases, like I'm on my first draft, and I am thinking really hard about making all the dots connect plot-wise. And so because I'm trying to make the dots connect plot-wise, I sometimes forget to have a compelling character move the plot instead of making sure all my dots connect.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, like... Because I love your books, Brandon. I mean, we've talked about this at length, how much I love them. And
that's why you guys are good friends, is because Brandon keeps around people that like
it always starts there.
Yeah, it starts there. It may never get past there, but it's great. I love your books, and the thing that I love is you have so many characters in your books, you know? Like, your books are just rich with characters. And they're all, like, in my mind, like, just unique and fun and interesting, and it definitely keeps me sucked into that world more, because I think, like, no matter how cool of a plot you have and everything like that, it's the characters that get me sucked in to wanting to follow them along their journey of peril or whatnot, because I've also read books that have, like, really intricate plots and all kinds of cool ideas, and the characters are boring.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if you don't care about the character, you're not going to care what happens.
Yeah. No. So yeah, I love that. I think that's awesome.
Now, Brandon, I know you've written a few scripts, but most of your writing is for novels and whatnot. When you write for an actor, right? And you've done that a lot with your like Divine Comedy and other stuff. What is the different, how do you treat that different, or is it the exact same process? You're writing a character and this is your process.
Here's what's similar. So when I was writing for Divine Comedy, writing comedy skits for stage, I would be writing to a character that I knew a certain friend of mine could play, mm-hmm. right? And so in Divine Comedy, we were we were everything at BYU except the actors, because the actors had on weekends plays that they had to be in, and so they couldn't also be in a comedy show. So it was everyone but the drama department doing Divine Comedy, right? We had engineers and English majors and stuff like that, more than we had actual actors, right? And so we were doing our best to act, but we usually weren't the best actors.
That wasn't your pinnacle skill.
Yeah, I was one of them, right? Like, I could sell a joke. I could act well enough to sell a joke, but I wasn't like this master character actor or something, right? And so when I would write to the strengths of the different friends. And I knew that Sean could play the dumb guy. So I would create a character who would let that I knew Sean could milk. And so me knowing my friends and their range was the equivalent of me knowing the character in a book, right? Like, when I'm writing a character in the book, I want to know that character well and stay true to them.
Gotcha.
When I was writing for stage, I wanted to know the actor who was going to play the character and write inside of a range that that actor could knock out of the park. You know, if it was Marin, somebody who was sweet and mean. And if it was, like, seemed sweet but was actually mean, like, she could play that kind of character so well. Or Sean could play a foolish character. He could play the fool so well, so funny. You know, and in that way, I would create content that hopefully worked.
Right? Yeah. Jaron, have you ever gotten a script where the part you're supposed to play is just written poorly? And what do you do in those moments where you're just like, this is flat, all the lines I have don't really work, they're not motivated properly, I'm just pushing plot, and I'm not...
Yeah, so you're basically describing almost all my... I'm just kidding. I've had great material actually given to me. No, you know, it's interesting. Like, when I was in L.A., the writing on those scripts were just, like, top-notch.
Yeah.
You know? And so even if I was a side character pushing the plot forward, I had stuff to work with. Yeah. I was like, okay, like this is fun. I know what I can do and whatnot. And yeah, I have. Like, I've done a lot of commercials as well, where I'm like the main character, I'm the spokesperson, and I'm like, how do I sell this and feel believable selling this? Because it's just like, I don't know, like selling random things, you know?
Yeah, how do you bring life into a sales pitch?
Into a sales pitch, right? And so the thing that's the hardest I've noticed is if the client or the director is like, you have to be word for word.
Right.
Like, everything on the page is scripture. And I'm like, if you read the words on your page, it's painful, you know? And
that's probably more commercial work, right?
Commercials, and there have been some films where it's like, I've had to do just word for word. And those are always the tough ones, because then I'm like, oh, crud, did I mess up?
Yeah, because then you're focused on words rather than the moment, right?
In the moment, and so it is a little tricky, and you have to kind of dig deep within yourself and figure out, I can still play an emotion. I can still bring out an emotion to the scene, and the words that are coming out happen to just be these words. But it is kind of clunky, because like sometimes I've done like low budget rom-coms or whatnot, where they want you to be very specific with those words. But I'm like, no one in their right mind would speak like this.
Right.
But they will in this world, you know? And so it's a bit tricky. The other thing is, and I don't know, Brandon, how you do it, but like when we're filming, we don't film in order.
Right.
We don't film in order. We're filming completely out of order. And so some scenes you have to be super duper emotionally charged. And then you're in the same location, but you got to be like way more mellow next scene. So you have to like also know in the story where you are at. And you have to know like what happened right before. You have to know what is going to happen right after. So that when you're coming into the scene, you can like fully be present as that exact thing. And there have been times I've worried when I've watched a movie. I'm like, dude, I don't know if this is going to play sequentially. I don't know if I was in at all. And thankfully, for the most part, it has been pretty cohesive. But
that would be a really hard part of it. Like where it makes me really see the difference between acting in a play, where you could track the progression of your character. You know,
because you do plays in order.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You're going through the whole arc throughout the show.
Yeah, you're living out moment to moment what the character is living out, versus versus like, okay, pretend like what just happened was devastating and now give us that and you didn't get to like ramp up to it, right?
Yeah.
I remember that's interesting.
I remember Fowler and I were having this conversation because when we did the Outpost, just the first season, he's like, hey, he was telling the whole cast, there is going to be a season one death, like a big death. And I'm like, huh, I knew it was going to be me. I just knew. I had a feeling. It was like, I'm like, just lay it on me, brother. I know it is me. And he calls me. He's like, oh, it's going to be you. And I'm like, I knew it. I'm like, all right, well, just give me a cool death. If you're going to, like, if I'm going to be
you're
going
to kill me, make it, yeah.
Yeah, make it cool. And he did.
Make it worth my while.
Yeah, like, I don't want to be something dumb. Like, I want to, like, and so he's like, no, I'll give you a good death. So I sacrificed my life for someone. I'm like, nah, I'll take that, you know. And then the very next day, we filmed, like, a whole other sequence, you know. So I've already died in one day. The next day, I haven't come to that scene yet, you know. So naturally, like, I don't know, like, because of the completely, like, just random ways in which we shoot scenes, once the project is done, it's like, okay, cool, like, the project is done, you kind of move on, and that's it, right? But what was interesting was months after the fact, I get these text messages being like, dude, you died. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, did some weird internet something or other happen?
Yeah, and people are claiming you're dead online or something.
And I'm like, wait, no, I'm good. What happened? And then I realized, oh, Outpost must have come out. And then my buddy, I don't know if you guys know Adam Johnson. You guys know Adam Johnson? Yeah, good buddy of mine. So he's like, dude, have you been on Twitter? And I'm like, no, I have not been on Twitter today. He's like, you need to go on Twitter right now and like just Google like Outpost and stuff. And there were people weeping over my death. Like there was just like artwork was made for my face, you know, like just all these things over this death. And it was interesting because I was like, oh my gosh, like how much of an impact this show made on people. Whereas for me, I'm like, well, I did my death that one day, and then I'm doing another scene another day, right?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing how my experience of it was very different than the people that are, like, kind of viewing the show. And
you're the guy who died, but you were emotionally distant from it,
yeah.
As everyone else was feeling the impact.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
No, as a kid, I always looked at actors who died in films, and I thought, why would you agree to do that? Like just refuse, and then your character can keep on being in the show.
Yeah.
I won't film it. I refuse to shoot.
Yeah, I didn't quite get how it worked. But
yeah, they're like, we will film a puppet from behind. Yeah.
Yes.
Your character will die.
Yeah.
It can be cool on screen, or we could do it the hard way.
Yeah.
But Brandon and I often talk about character deaths and when to do them. I think I try to push Brandon towards killing characters more often than he's comfortable with. But for the exact reason you're talking about, Sharon, right? A good death, a death that means something, it is because my thought is after the movie or book is over, they're all dead anyway. So you might as well.
Yeah.
Get something out of that.
Yeah, you know, and it was such a cool experience because the Outpost, I played a mute character, which was tough for me because if anyone knows me, they just know I love to talk. But I played a mute character, and I'm like, all right, this is going to be interesting. This is going to be a fun little challenge. And it was nice because...
Easy for memorizing,
It was easy for memorizing, for sure. But I had to play...
You're like, but I got paid per line.
I know. So I'm like, dang it, how dare you? But it was all about looks, right? It was all about looks and like body language and stuff like that. And there's one particular episode that was very much focused, like a big scene was focused on me and why I became mute, because I wasn't born mute. I had my tongue burned out. And so there's like this whole scene that happened, and it was like a really like kind of an emotionally charged scene, which was really cool because I played it as a mute character. And it was interesting because... Again, when I was like reading through like some of these Twitter comments, how much that character and that loyalty meant to a lot of people, which I thought was like really fascinating, right? And so it was like an honor to kind of breathe life into a character that could mean something for a lot of different people. And yeah, Brandon knows this, like most of the stuff I do has been in the comedy realm, and so we don't really kill characters unless it's a comedic thing. But you really don't kill characters too much in the comedy. So right. In this thing, it was actually really fun to play that part.
You had your chance to do the death.
had my chance to do the death.
It's one of our goals as writers and as creators and as artists is, and especially one of my goals very specifically, is I want my reader to emotionally react to my story. Mm-hmm. Because when you emotionally react to a story, the story has become true for you.
Right.
Right? Because we don't emotionally react to nothing. That's not even very sane, right?
Right, right.
And so if I'm laughing, I'm laughing at something. Something has become real. If I'm crying, I'm crying at something. Something has become real. And a good death can elicit such a strong emotional reaction if we have become connected to the character that it can take the level of reality of the book or story to deeper places than it existed previously. Almost like maybe you could mathematically make a claim that the bigger or deeper the reaction, the truer the story becomes.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
And so
it also makes the conflict more real too. Like nobody's safe. As soon as you start killing people, nobody's safe. And that for an audience member, that makes the experience that much more real, because
what it does to tension, what it does to suspense.
Everything's real at that point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what's interesting? I was gonna say, so I mean, I love acting. I think it's just so fun. But what's interesting is I actually think I might prefer reading to watching movies.
Yeah, talk you about know? That.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Brandon, you mentioned this like a couple weeks ago and I was there for it, but when you're reading, your imagination fills in the story, mm-hmm. right? And it can make it as grand as it wants or as small as it wants. And you can just sit there. Like, I know that, like, when I pick up a good book, I could be there for hours and just isolate myself, and I'm in my own little world, and it's just awesome. I love it. And, you know, I can take a book with me, like, in places where I might not be able to take a movie with me, too, right? Now, it's interesting because it's always fun to see a movie come to life, and I love being a part of it and all that stuff, but I don't know. I've been thinking about it lately because my buddy's been staying over with me, and we end up watching movies together, and I think that's what's so cool about movies are a great thing to watch with your friends, you know?
With a friend,
yes.
You watch a movie, and you both imagine the same story the same way
mm-hmm.
by watching a movie that's presented that you can both experience at the same time in the same way, and then comment on it, realizing all the same things because your experience matches.
Yes, and because of that, it's like we're laughing together, we're joking around, we're like, oh my gosh, can you say that funny line? That's amazing. But what I've noticed is I haven't been as impressed with the movies that have been coming out lately.
Right.
I'm way more of a fan of like movies like in the 90s or even late 80s or 90s or 2000s. But like the recent ones, I'm like, I don't know of any that I'm like super duper stoked about. But books feel timeless to me, you know, because your imagination can continue to evolve as you're getting older and older. And so, you know, I was younger when I think when I first was introduced to the Chronicle of Narnia books. And then like as I got older and I would read them again, new imaginations and new things would fill it based off of where I was at just in life.
And probably identifying with different characters too.
Totally.
Right?
Well, I make this argument when I go to schools, right? When you read a book, you become a co-creator of the story.
Yeah.
You, I love that.
You are bringing the story to life in your mind. The author provides the words, but you are the person who realizes the story. And therefore, you're rewarded for being smart. You're rewarded for having a good imagination. You're rewarded for the deeper your understanding is and the deeper your maturity is, you gain greater power to bring the story to life in a richer way. Also, because you're bringing it to life inside your head, you are, you feel like you're part of the story in a way that's different than when it's outside in off a screen. Mm-hmm. With a book, it's almost inside out. You bring in the words, you build it inside, and because you're experiencing it within you, it feels like you're part of it. Like you're not looking at something outside. And I think for me, at least, it gives me this, it's the closest I get to a vicarious experience. Like a movie is me peeking into a window. reading a book, if it's a good book and if it's working, mm-hmm. I am having that experience inside of me, experiencing it sort of like how I experience life, because I experience life from the inside of
me. Yeah. There's actually a progression. And that is, if you start with theater, right, that is the most distance you can be from the experience, right? Because you're far away.
Yeah.
You're not in people's heads very often. Sometimes there's internal monologues in theater and stuff, but everything's in a wide shot. There is no close-ups. There's no POV from anybody's point of view or anything.
Sure.
And then when you transition into film, you start getting those close-ups. You get those POVs. You get more inner monologues or stuff like that, and you can see it more clearly. But
subtleties of sound, subtleties of music.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And then the ultimate is reading, right? Because you are creating all those things, and you're just getting closer to that source material. And so, and because of that, film is actually closer to experience to books than it is to theater for the audience members.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I like that. I can see that argument. There's another thing that is...
I had a film teacher who that was one of his things.
Yeah. He made that argument, but it's a good argument. Another thing that I noticed as we were having this conversation is that the part of character making that Charon does is most similar to the part of character making I do when I'm actively writing.
Mm-hmm.
So like for me, there's a lot of planning, and that's not as much like what Charon has to do. Like he does planning, and that's part of it. But like when he talks about being present in the moment as the character and experiencing the scene in a way that looks and feels authentic. That's where I am trying to be when I'm actually doing the writing, is present in that moment, bringing the character to life, reacting as they would react, right? Where I'm trying to inhabit the character sort of like how an actor inhabits the character. And for me, it's weird because I'm bouncing back and forth between characters, trying to inhabit everybody, maybe like a puppeteer controlling multiple puppets, or like an actor having an out-of-body experience or something. But the thing that's similar is, after whatever planning I do, if as I write, I can be very present and in kind of a flow state, that's where I generate my best writing too. Like if I get too in my head about what I'm writing, I talk about that as being, I try to do it with craft. And you're like if you're not in the moment, you can kind of fake it with mm-hmm. craft, because I'm just organizing words correctly. But when I'm in the moment, I don't have to think very hard about craft, and often craft better.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so it's funny that, at least funny or noteworthy to me, that the state an actor is trying to be in when they're fully immersed in a scene is the state I'm trying to be in when I'm fully immersed in writing a scene. I'm trying to be in a writer's trance that's akin to a reader's trance, where they're not thinking about
the
words.
But the advantage you have is you can rely on craft for a time, and it could be weeks and going back and forth and have these moments of being in the flow and doing that. But Charon, when you've got 4 or 5 takes and then they're moving on, right? And like you, like if you're not in the zone, they move on. And
I have rewriting, and Charon has like a little window that it has to work inside that window. That's a tough one, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, it was interesting. I mentioned I like to produce as well as like to act. And I was producing and acting in this movie called The Last Man's on Earth. It's so low budget. It's so ridiculous. But when I look at that movie, I just have only fond memories because of just how much fun it was to make. Didn't make any money at all, but like it was just so much fun to make. And I played the lead character of it, and I played an alpha male, which is already kind of ridiculous because like there's nothing about me that'd be like, that's the alpha male, you know. But that's why the writer's like, dude, like it would be so funny for you to be like this overly intense alpha male kind of character. And the whole premise is about these guys that are want to be survival experts, but if anything were to actually happen, they'd probably be the first to die. And they have this ability to go epic, which means that in their own minds, they're way cooler than they really are. And so when they're epic, they're like, it's like a Michael Bay type of movie, and they're like the action heroes of this movie. But when you cut back to normal mode, it's just like them being idiots. And they stumble upon this man who he's the Oracle who claims that the end of the world is coming, and he's like, oh my gosh, we have to team up to stop the end of the world, you know? But anyway, it was interesting because this character that I was playing was so overly intense. He needed to be for this thing. And we were shooting 16, 17 hours a day consistently, and it was exhausting to play a character with that much intensity and that much energy. And there was one day I remember I was in every single shot for 17 hours, and to like just have like just so much intensity this whole time. And then we had to reshoot the third act three different times. And the third act, this one particular week, I happened to be in Utah to film. And the day that we started filming was like early morning Tuesday, like 6 a.m. we started. And I had just gotten to Utah like around 1 a.m. the night before. 6 a.m. we're shooting. And then my manager calls and says, hey, you booked a national commercial. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I can't wait to do that. Yeah, on Thursday. And I'm like, oh,
wait,
hold on. Time out. I can't do that. I'm in Utah filming. They're like, you have to come. You have like it. You got to do this commercial. So I tell my team, I'm like, you guys, I booked this commercial. This never really happens, but I did book it, and I have to go do it. And we have to film. What are we going to do? They're like, okay, let's rework things. And so they reworked it. So I filmed all of my scenes, and they would like film other stuff the other days. 26 hours straight.
Oh, gosh.
Okay?
Wow.
And it was so crazy, and it was so intense. And
talking about having to deliver inside a window.
It was crazy, and I was, like, so tired. And the very, like 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. was, like, the last little bit of it because we've been going since 6 a.m. the day before. We were doing a fight scene, and that was my end. And I had just nothing left in me. Like, and we had no crafty left because we had consumed all of our crafty except for baby carrots. And so they were like shoving baby carrots in my mouth between takes just to keep some sort of energy up so I could like keep like pretending to fight and all of this stuff. And then like I rushed to the airport, and another random story. I'm rushing to the airport. I'm standing in line. There's like this Indian guy standing behind me. I'm like, oh, another Indian guy in Salt Lake. This is crazy. And I turn around and look. It's M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh, no.
I'm like, what the heck? I'm like, what is happening right now? And so I talk to him.
And he's like, Charon, I've come with a message.
I've come with a message. And I'm like, tell me everything. Am I hallucinating?
Yeah. But you've unlocked bonus mode with all these hours of acting.
I knew I had. But it was just interesting because you wonder, how do you have this kind of energy and ability when you're doing a character like that, well, that's just like so overly intense all the time. And it really requires like a lot out of you because like I remember like when I finished that week of filming, like I passed out in a way I had never been able to sleep like that, you know, just gone, right? And I guess like that's part of this thing where you realize like I'm doing this because of this passion in me, right? Like that's the thing that's like kind of motivating me. Now, when you're tired, like that passion tends to be like a little waned. And I'd love to hear you from your perspective, Brandon, because you wrote like this full-on novel in like a weekend or however long it was, right?
Yeah, in a week I did. Or in a week. That one time Jason was involved.
Yes. I want to hear about that because like the amount of like fortitude it would take to write however many pages you had to write, it's just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, usually that's not the way it works with the book. With the book, I can work when I'm fresh, and I can, if I get not fresh, I can go back the next day and fix it, right?
Yeah.
And trying to cram it into a week was definitely a special kind of experiment, which maybe some other time we can talk more in depth about it because it's a lot, but. But for that exercise, yeah, if I hadn't been very passionate about the idea and really been very game to try something very unusual, I mean, there was no way I would have written, you know, almost 300-page novel in 7 days.
That's insane.
But under the right circumstances, I managed to.
And with
the
right preparation, too, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, with some
you
prep.
You didn't accidentally write 300 pages in 7 days.
Like in that situation, the character. I was trying to mimic a character trying to write down his experiences in a week. And so I figured that character would have his memories. So I had to have a story figured out before I tried to write it down for that week.
Yeah.
But even so, it was fast and weird and challenging. And the result wasn't quite as good as I wanted it to be. And I didn't have all the outcomes I wanted to get out of it, but it was definitely an interesting creative exercise.
Awesome. Well, I think we're going to wrap up things there. Charon, thanks for being with us today.
Jason,
do you have anything to plug, anything that we should know about that you're involved with?
No, man. I mean, I have a bunch of different movies and projects kind of in the works, but like nothing like that's set in stone. The movie that I had just recently produced, Alien Country, is available on Amazon if you guys want to check it out. It was a super fun experience. A lot of hard work. We started filming in 2020. We just got it released last year, so it took a little bit of time, but that was fun. And so right now I'm just dabbling on a bunch of different projects, but nothing like super duper specific.
Awesome. Well, that's cool. Congratulations on that film.
Thank you, man.
Brandon, do you got anything to plug for us now?
You know, like the latest book is Tales of Newland Doran. So if you want to go on a fun adventure with the satyrs from Fable Haven. These irresponsible satyrs, it's fun and funny, and you could read that one if you've never even read any of my other stuff. It's kind of self-sustaining. That's my latest release.
That's awesome, and we just appreciate all our listeners joining us on Mulling It Over. If you do want to participate on the podcast in the form of submitting questions or anything, you know, find us on Instagram, send us some questions. We'd love to address those in a future episode. We also want to get the word out about the podcast. So tell a friend, share it with whoever you have. And we thank you for being with us on another episode. Hey there, fellow adventurers. I am Jason Conforto.
And I'm Tyler Crump, and we are hosts of a podcast, Adventure AI, where we play Dungeons & Dragons with an AI named Alex the Language Lord.
I'm Alex the Language Lord. Join us as we craft epic tales together.
Do you want to learn how to use AI in your D&D campaign?
Or how AI can force you to do things that you don't want to do? Wait a second, we don't like that.
Look no further. Adventure AI is the podcast for all your AI-powered D&D adventures.
Alex the Language Lord not only comes up with campaigns for us,
he also helps us create our characters, create our backstories, and even give us some fun magical items.
And really takes all of the human aspects out of Dungeons & Dragons. So it's not really playing at all.
Follow Adventure AI on whatever platform you listen to podcasts.